Well, it's time now to look at back at the week in federal politics, and Pauline Hanson walked straight into the headlines after returning from Europe as the Labor faithful gathered in Adelaide to debate the party's policy future. Let's take a listen.
Well, it is wrong, but it's also a two-way street. But I'm not saying that it's just men and women can lose their cool as well.
One in four Australian women are victims of domestic violence. You know, that's not a two-way street. That's a crime.
I don't occupy my day worrying about what Pauline has paid for or hasn't paid for.
Trump said, OK, all those that are in the country illegally, I'll actually give you a one-way ticket out of the country. I think that's a great way of doing it.
Are you really comfortable with where she is taking you?
I think... Sit down! Sorry. It's a dog.
We've seen an ISIS terrorist wanting to come back to our country. The Labor Party needs to commit to preventing that from happening.
As far as I'm concerned, that person can rot in jail.
Today I announce that our government will create the Fair Work Court.
We are expecting a lot of debate on AI, on gambling, on the issue of a gas tax.
My party understands as making sure that we have fuel security at this point in time.
The clock is ticking. Like, I think Australians will expect at some point this decision gets made.
It's Labor MP Ed Husic rounding out some of the sounds of the political week. A big week also for Barnaby Joyce's dog Stella, who featured prominently on 7:30. Well, to break it all down, our Friday panel, Michelle Grattan is Chief Political Correspondent at The Conversation and is Professorial Fellow at the University of Canberra and joins me in our Parliament House studio. Michelle, great to have you back. Thank
Hi,
you for
Sally.
Coming in. Also, Chloe Boris is a Senior Political Correspondent with 10 News and is at the Labor Conference in Adelaide. Chloe, good morning to you.
Good morning. It's nice to be home.
Yes, indeed, for you. And Claire Armstrong is the ABC's Chief Digital Political Correspondent. Claire, welcome back to you as well.
Hello.
Now, starting with One Nation, Pauline Hanson said that taxpayers didn't pay for her trip to Europe, but she won't say who did. Claire, does it matter?
Look, I think it will eventually matter if we get to a point where this trip is disclosed on the normal register, where we see that maybe it was the donation of a specific individual or entity. And even if it is just used through party funds, for example, that could raise questions. We know that One Nation successfully raised quite a lot of money in their quote-unquote Fire the Liar campaign, where they sought donations to campaign against the Albanese government's tax changes. So I think it will matter if we eventually get an answer that is pretty well anything other than the trip being personally funded by Pauline Hanson, because of course there is a lot of scrutiny now about the influence on her party and the conduct of the party, given how prominently they're featuring in the polls.
Michelle Grattan, you saw One Nation's original rise around 30 years ago. What have you made of this trip of Pauline Hanson to Europe? Not only her comments, the company she was keeping, a brief also meet up with Gina Reinhart in Europe as well. There have been subsequent interviews upon Pauline Hanson's return to Australia. What sort of effect has all this had in the past couple of weeks?
Look, I think it has a cumulative effect potentially, and I also think you need to divide the support for One Nation into two categories. The people who are really rusted on won't care about who paid for the trip, and after all, Barnaby Joyce has suggested he thinks it is Gina Reinhart, or a lot of these other comments, very controversial comments about domestic violence and other matters. So if you're rusted on, it all passes over. But I think that those who are using Pauline Hanson as a protest vote, a grievance vote, will be more likely over time to become increasingly doubtful about her, especially as they near going into the ballot box. As for Hanson herself, I think the refusal to disclose who paid for the trip is another sign of her general defiance. She knows she's going to have to eventually declare this, but she's just saying, I'm going to do it on my terms.
Chloe, what sort of response have we seen from Labor Party members at the National Conference to some of the comments that Pauline Hanson's been making?
Oh, look, it was a plain truth among the true believers at the Labor conference yesterday that One Nation poses a threat. And, you know, they weren't sort of veiled commentary, indirect. No, you know, One Nation was named. It was very obvious. And, you know, many of the people who got up and spoke on the conference floor did reference it. You know, you had very specific attack lines, like from Premier Peter Malinauskas about, you know, if you can't govern your dog, how can you govern the country? And then the Prime Minister also picked up on, you know, a lot of the monoculture and, you know, Labor being, you know, what he says, a party of progress over protest. So it was very obvious that they are taking this as a serious threat.
If I could ask you, Claire, if we're looking at the Labor conference, it's been characterised as a conference in many ways that where debate is happening prior to the conference or behind closed doors rather than on the floor. Is that accurate so far?
It's certainly accurate. I think the way I've been looking at this conference is not to say that it is less democratic. There are forums in which people in the party are getting to have their say, and that includes even before we get to this conference, there's been a national policy forum process that where a lot of the debates were hashed out to even get to the draft platform we're now talking about amending. But it certainly has been a less transparent one. So even though some people, you know, may feel that they've had a very orderly process where everyone has had their say, that hasn't happened within the view of the public. Now, it's worth adding that a lot of parties formulate their policy platforms far from the view of the general viewing public, except that Labor have always made it a point of pride that they do their essentially dirty work out in the open. They invite observers, they open to the media for this process. And sitting in the conference yesterday, watching every single amendment that was proposed pass on voices alone, is sort of an indication that, you know, yes, discussions are happening, but we're certainly not seeing how the sausage is made in the way that we maybe have in conferences past. I mean, the only other flip side to that is I had a delegate say to me ahead of the conference, you know, kind of upset that it gets characterised as being a stitch-up, saying that if conferences have passed, people used to scribble amendments down on bits of paper on the floor and throw them up in the air as if that was effective policy making. So, you know, I guess I could see that there is obviously merit in having that process, even though as a journalist I'm struggling to see how it comes together.
Michelle, with your experience, what we've seen in these early couple of days with the ALP conference in Adelaide, how does that compare to times past?
Over the years, of course, the conference has changed and evolved. But if, for example, we compare it to the Hawke period, you had major policies that government wanted to implement or in some cases more or less had implemented and was seeking permission in retrospect. They were fully debated and often argued quite passionately on the conference floor. But my impression yesterday from watching the economic debate was not just the fact that it was all pre-organised, but that the speeches really did not go to many of the critical problems that are facing the economy and Australian standards of living, big issues, productivity, for example. People just didn't get into those issues in any depth, even leaving aside the fact that they weren't going to fight each other over them. They just did not peel back the layers of the onion, as it were, and we need those debates in Australia at the moment.
Let's look at a separate issue. Chloe, the opposition says the government should do everything to stop Australian-born Dr. Tariq Cumlay from returning to Australia from Iraq, where he's understood to have spent time in prison. What are the options and how much pressure is the government under here?
Yeah, this adds to already immense pressure on the federal government, you know, on top of the cohort of so-called ISIS brides in recent months. Look, you know, the federal government has been dealing with this for a little while. What we've heard so far this week has been really sort of a similar commentary to what we've been hearing, you know, things like, you know, they should not be coming back to Australia, in particular this doctor, they won't be helping or providing any assistance, while acknowledging that, you know, there are constitutional limitations in preventing them from coming back.
Well, a big thank you to our Friday political panel. Michelle Grattan is Chief Political Correspondent at The Conversation and Professorial Fellow at the University of Canberra. Always good to have you here, Michelle. Thank you very much for coming into the studio this morning.
Thanks, Sally.
And to our Adelaide contingent this morning, Chloe Boris is Senior Political Correspondent at 10 News, Adelaide girl. She's back home for a few days. Chloe, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Claire Armstrong is the ABC's Chief Digital Political Correspondent. Claire, thank you very much for stepping in for us this morning as well.
No worries. Thanks for having me, Sally.